that is the first thing that we need to say about this. I think that if you look at how long it takes to get to it, it can be drafted. This is probably something that will happen over about 7 or 8 years. Although I think that there is one important piece of policy that will inform the direction in the future legislation, and that is the white paper on integrated solutions and waste management, which was passed a number of years ago. The current negotiation follows the policy approach in the white paper. I think the second thing that we need to say is that, before I go on to the presentation itself, that, and there's a little bit on it in the presentation, that we have a very big and complex problem around waste management in South Africa. Essentially, a lot of it is legacy issues. The fact that waste management was never dealt with, waste management and the pollution that emanates from waste management was never dealt with in any kind of focused way in the past, and a number of the things that we deal with in this legislation are attempts to be able to address that situation. I think the second issue is that, you know, we're a throwaway society in South Africa. People, we throw everything away and we never think about what happens to something when it gets thrown away. And that fact has caused over years a very big set of institutional problems. I mean, as society has urbanized, as people have got wealthier, as the industrial sector has grown, the volumes and amounts of waste that are getting generated in South Africa have grown exponentially. And yet, at the same time, the kind of budgets that are set aside in municipalities for waste management haven't increased. The numbers of people working on waste management haven't necessarily increased. The demand for the service has grown hugely, and in many cases the toxicity of the things that are thrown away has increased. So really there is a very big waste problem. In the light of that, what we've written is a piece of framework legislation. It is framework legislation, and I think that it's one of the things we're going to need to get to grips with. And we see, in the way it's been written, we understand that this is a challenge that is going to have to be dealt with over years. And the implementation of this bill is not something that is going to happen tomorrow. So it's been written. I think that when we come to talk about the way it's been written, there are a whole lot of things that must happen now, and then there are things that we see being phased in the medium to longer term. And when we go through the bill and look at those kinds of things, because really, you know, there is a challenge that is legal, that is in terms of policy and information, that is in terms of institutional capacity, that is in terms of finance, that is in terms of human capacity. And the bill has been written in a sense that puts out the long term vision for how we want the situation to be managed, which is that we want much less of it out firstly in the first place, and then we want to deal with what gets left over in a much better way, but we don't see that happening tomorrow. Okay, so with that I want to move on to the presentation. And just to say, the way the presentation is structured is that we're going to go through the whole section by section. This is not a clause by clause, so we're going to talk about what is in each section of the book. Okay, the presentation next slide deals with essentially three issues. I've talked a little bit about background, we'll talk a bit more. Then to talk about the consultation process, the challenges, and then the context. I think I've dealt with the background on slide 4, and you can go on to slide 5. Specifically, what we've done is to set up institutional arrangements for waste management that outline the roles and responsibilities of all spheres of government. Then we've set up a strategic and planning framework as well as norms and standards for waste management. Then obligations relating to different various aspects of waste management for various parties. We then look at licensing issues, which is a very substantive section of the bill. We then look at compliance monitoring and enforcement, and then obviously the administrative matters. So I think that really is the very broad architecture of the legislation. The bill has gone through a very extensive public participation process. It was gazetted for public comment. from the 12th of April to, from the 12th of January to the 12th of April this year. But I think that the important thing to say is that prior to that, in the drafting process in 2006, there was extensive consultation both within government as well as a number of stakeholder workshops that were held in pre-publication consultations that were held with industry, as with NGOs, as well as with municipalities, the provinces and national departments, who all had a look at the bill before it went to cabinet, and then that consultation process was repeated again in that process. We held public participation workshops in all provinces. In some provinces we held more than one workshop. We held separate workshops for national departments and the provincial departments of environment. We had a very big local government waste conference that happened in March this year. We then held specific consultation workshops with specific stakeholders, including the Institute of Waste Management of Southern Africa, a number of different NGO consultations, and then a number of meetings with business and industry. And I think that within that, two major groupings, we talked quite extensively to the recycling sector, as well as with, I suppose, the waste generators, the big industrial groupings that generate quite a lot of the country's waste streams. There were then a whole lot of bilateral meetings held with water affairs, trade industry, national treasury, Department of Provincial and Local Government, and then two provinces, Gauteng and Western Cape, had specific issues around the bill. And then we've got 69 written submissions that we went through, and there is a very large comment document where we processed all of those, all of those comments. And then following that, we had, and I'll talk about it when we come to the relevant sections, quite a long engagement with the state law advisors, the chief state law advisor, before the bill was certified, on what were potentially constitutional issues in the legislation, and that they had to be addressed before we could finalise. So those were dealt with as well, before it was certified. Okay, in terms of just the waste management challenge in the country, we have 1,329 disposal sites. This slide is a little bit outdated because we've been moving quite fast through the permitting of disposal sites, but they're probably about 550, between 550 and 600 disposal sites that weren't permitted. Permitting was only brought in initially when sites were built up until the late 80s, early 90s, you didn't have to license them. So there's been a long process in the country of retrospectively permitting landfill sites. Until 89, you didn't have to. Our estimation was that there are 58, probably gone down, and those hazardous waste sites that aren't permitted. There's significant and uninhibited waste generation. Under the current legal regime, which I'll talk a little bit about now, you have a large percentage of the waste stream was excluded from the definition of waste, including, I mean, predominantly that of mining waste. The unacceptable environmental impacts of waste management, and we'll show you some slides just now, there's a lack of cradle-to-grave control, so people, we generate waste with abandon, we don't think about how we produce it in order to look at whether we can't limit what is produced. And basically, we lag very far behind the emerging global regulatory regime, which is really setting waste as something that should be able to not be generated in the first place, or something that should really, at all times where possible, be able to be recovered or reused. And we have historically lacked a strong waste vision and strategy in South Africa. And the next few slides are some examples of the problems, looking at what happens when people dump waste in riverbanks, how it changes the river course, looking at the problems of dump waste being dumped in residential areas, the air pollution problems from people burning waste, looking at bad management of particularly hazardous and toxic waste goes on, heating drums. So kind of you have all of these, and I'm sure you yourself from your own constituencies, I'm sure every single municipality in this country there's some major waste problem that people are trying to address. In terms of the structure of the bull. There are nine major chapters in the bull. I'll go through them one by one and go through the detail in them. And what I'm going to do as I go through is to give some sense of why we've done things in the way we've done and why we took the decisions that we did. I think firstly, in relation to the interpretations of the first point I wanted to make, is there was a long debate about whether the soul needed its own set of principles. And the view we took was that the NEMA principles apply to this act. So NEMA Chapter 2 has got a long set of principles around environmental management, and we felt that those principles were adequate in order to deal with waste management, in particular because since NEMA was passed, there's a body of a clear understanding of what those principles mean has emerged over time. And to write new principles without understanding very clearly how they might be interpreted or how they need to be consistent with the NEMA principles is something that we thought was a problem. We want to use the NEMA principles. Secondly, there were long debates with many stakeholders around the definitions of waste, and we've reproduced what we finally settled on as the definition of waste, and it's set out in slide 14. And so it means any substance, whether or not it can be reduced, reused, recycled, and recovered, a substance that is surplus, unwanted, rejected, discarded, abandoned, or disposed of, where the generator has got no further use for the purpose of production, reprocessing, or consumption, a substance that must be treated or disposed of, or that is identified as a waste by the minister. But, and we put in this caveat after long engagement with the recycling industry and with industry, that a byproduct is not considered waste, and any portion of waste, once really is recycled and recovered, ceases to be waste. I think there you've got a situation where certain industrial processes, something comes out at the end of a conveyor belt or out of a pipe that in fact can be used directly into another production process. So it's waste for the purposes of one process, but it is a useful input into another, and we didn't want to catch all of that in the definition. And we also didn't want to kind of the recycling industry wanted a regime that would facilitate recycling, recovery, and reuse of waste. I think the big issue on page 15, the objects are fairly straightforward. The general duty of the state, I think, is fairly straightforward. The application of the Act is something where we responded to a debate and to requests from that were made in the public submissions and in the engagements with other departments. We have a situation where certain waste streams are dealt with in other legislation. And what we have done is to therefore limit the application of this Act to apply to the extent that waste stream is not already dealt with in another piece of legislation. So, for example, the one example is radioactive waste, which is dealt with in mineral and energy legislation. It's also dealt with the purpose of radioactive isotopes that are used in the health sector are covered in legislation that is managed by the Department of Health, and we didn't want to have these overlapping legal regimes. So what we've done is to limit ours to work up to the point that it is regulated, and we've set up specific pieces of legislation where this act does not apply. And then under Section 5, I've spoken about the NEMA principle. Then Chapter 2 deals with the natural waste management strategy and with norms and standards. Now, the one thing that I think will arise in the public hearings and that we need to clarify is that after the white paper on integrated pollution and waste management was passed, the Danish government provided funding for South Africa to do what was then called the natural waste management strategy. And what that strategy did was that it picked up aspects of the policy framework in the white paper and started to look at how you would turn those into a strategy. But it is not a comprehensive strategy for the country. It was a particular piece of work funded by a particular donor. Did draw in a wide range of stakeholders. And what we've done is to talk about establishment of a national waste management strategy. We've seen that as a much broader strategy for the country as a whole, into which the work that was done for this donor-funded, this Danita-funded piece of work would then become an input into that strategy, because that strategy was not comprehensive and it was also done some time ago, and there are things in it that needs to be added to and it needs to be amended. So just to clarify, that's what the strategy is. And we, similar to the Air Quality Act, we obliged the minister to establish a strategy within 2 years of the section of the bill coming into effect. We've outlined the scope of the strategy, and the strategy basically, in a sense, is the master plan that would guide the implementation of the Act. That is what the strategy is. So what we want from the, we've just published in relation to air quality, the Air Quality Management Framework, and this would be a similar document in relation to the waste sector that could chart a way forward in relation to implementation. We then, in Section 7, 8, and 9, we have set up, the standard section. It provides, it sets out for the provision to establish national and provincial norms and standards, and then local waste service standards. And I want at this point in time to talk a little bit about the way local government and municipal government is dealt with in this legislation. In the Constitution, solid waste disposal and refuse removal is an exclusive competence of municipalities. And when we wrote this legislation and in the certification process in discussion with the state law advisor, we needed to be extremely careful that we did not impinge on the mandate of local government to the extent that we were going beyond our own constitutional mandate in relation to setting norms and standards in a national framework and national legislation within which that function is taken, within that function is carried out. So what we've done is that we have been, what we've then done is to set national and provincial, provide the national and provincial norms and standards to be done, and also then for local waste service standards to be written that then would guide municipalities on how they would then carry out their functions. And that is Section 9 in the actual bill, Section 9 on page 12. I think the second thing that I need to refer to at this point in time is that the way you manage waste is something that has major implications for the economy. And in trying to work out in the legislation what is the functional division of responsibilities between national, provincial and local governments, one of the things that we had also taken into account was what needed to be done nationally in order to maintain economic a consistency in relation to things that could have an impact on the economy, and we'll come on to that later. But our approach has been to say that where if you do something one way in one province, you would do it another way in another province, you would create some level of economic distortion. In general, we've said that is something that would need to be regulated at a national level. So, for example, if the bottlers, if people if we put if one province says we're going to charge 50 cents for a deposit scheme for such and such a bottle, and then another province said, well, that substance can only be manufactured in plastic bottles and we won't send them, you're going to create problems for manufacturing and for industry and for the distribution and logistics system in the country that may not make sense. And then you said that kind of a regulation or thinking out how that would happen would need to be something that would be done nationally. And I think then linked to that, there are sections in the legislation run through where we've said the minister will do it either in or after consultation with another minister, and there are particularly key national ministers who have a major role to play. Firstly, the Minister of Finance, because there are economic measures or financial measures in the bill where we've said things that must be done in consultation with the Minister of Finance. Similarly, there are issues there that affect trade and industry, and again, we've said it's got to be done in after consultation with the Minister of Trade and Industry. Similarly, in relation to provincial and local government, there are points at which functions in the legislation need to be carried out also in consultation with the Minister of provincial and local government. And finally, when it becomes particularly to the licensing regime, there's a very close relationship between deep and water affairs, and there we've provided for decision making to be coordinated between those two ministers. So I think more than many other pieces of legislation, you might find references to activities or functions that must be carried out with other ministers. But I think it is very important because of the cross-cutting nature. I mean, it is a cross-cutting piece of legislation. Okay, so those are the sections on the sections dealing with normative standards. We then go on to chapter 3, which deals with institutional and planning matters, and the section 10 deals with the appointment of waste management officers by the minister, MECs and municipalities. And I think this is something that has caused some confusion. What we want to do is put in place a similar provision that is in the Air Quality Act to say that every sphere of government, every organ of state that deals with waste management as a part of its regulatory or policy responsibility must identify a person to whom the public can have recourse in relation to the waste management matter. So if the provider sitting next to me is the waste management officer in the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, we will put that on the website, and when people, members of the public, want to address us or to deal with us in relation to something related to waste, she becomes the warm body that must respond or must ensure that a response is given. And part of that is from a recognition that in many cases, people find it very hard to know who they address in relation to their waste concerns, and we feel that it is important that there is a person who can be held accountable, not for doing it themselves, but for ensuring that issues are responded to and that government is held accountable in relation to prevention. We then provide for integrated waste management planning, which provides for organs of state to set up how they intend to carry out their function with regard to waste management. This is something that in fact has already been done. Many municipalities in a number of provinces have already either completed or are in the process of doing integrated waste management plans, but it's never been a legal requirement or it's been voluntary. So that system of waste planning we've set up. Then in section 11, 12 and 13 are the detail of how what our responsibilities are, what goes into an integrated waste management plan and how we take on implementation in relation to it. And for municipalities, what we've done is to link it into the IDP. A system for national and provincial government to do environmental management, environmental management plans and integrated environmental plans under NEMA, we said you need to link it into that. So we try to integrate that planning around waste management. Okay. Then chapter four deals with a wide range of waste management measures. And I think that's quite a lot of the innovation and the very new things that we haven't had in our legal framework before are dealt with in chapter four. So I'm going to go through it in a little bit of detail. I think the first part of it provides for the minister to declare a waste to be a priority waste. And it says, if you have reasonable grounds, the least the waste poses a threat to health, well-being, and the environment because of the quantity or composition of the waste, that you need specific measures, and then that those specific measures may basically improve the way that waste is minimized or reduces the impact. and he then provided the emissaries to ask the minister in writing to declare waste a priority waste. And here we are talking about, I think, not huge amounts of waste, but we're talking about a really special measure when something is a serious problem, either because it has caused the scale of it, maybe it's not a huge problem in and of its own life, but taken across the country, you've got a huge problem, and you need very special measures to deal with. Or you've got a waste stream that is particularly toxic, and you need very special measures to deal with it. This declaration of the priority waste allows for their waste to be managed in particular ways. The example that we put in the presentation is around asbestos, which at the moment we are trying to regulate under the Environment Conservation Act, or maybe something we've passed plastic bag regulations. And maybe if you wanted to deal with a massive waste stream like plastic bags into the future, you must declare it a priority waste to deal with it in a separate kind of way. Where there might be a significant impact on the economy, we set declaration must be done in consultation with the Minister of DTI, and where declaration of the waste as a priority waste is going to have a particular impact on an economic sector or on a particular group of people, we said before you advertise the declaration, before you call for comments, you need to consult with those affected people. So in this case, we would consult, or it doesn't really exist in a major way, but with the asbestos industry, and say we intend to declare this waste a priority waste. We want to hear your views before we put a notice in the gazette to this industry going to do it. And that was something that I think out of the submissions from industry in particular, that we added in was that, and also from the union. Because clearly people are worried that if you say that something may no longer be produced, then obviously there are job implications for it. So what he said is that he would consult with directly affected parties up front and then go into a broader public consultation process. We then in chapter 4 go on to, in part 2, go on to a general duty. And what we set up is, and these are things that really a general duty for holders of waste. And it is a new thing that doesn't exist in our law at all, but it sets out the fact that everybody in the country, in some way or another, has a responsibility in relation to waste, and we set out at a very general level what the duties are of those people. Part 3 is also completely new, and I mean, I think this is, again, the first time ever in South Africa that we've tried to use legislation to drive a waste minimization approach. And Part 3 sets out the requirements around reduction, reuse, recycling, and recovery of waste. And the purpose of it is, of Section 17, is to provide for environmentally sound and effective reduction, reuse, recycling, and recovery of waste. Section 18 is, again, a new thing in South African law. It provides for extended producer responsibility measures, and essentially what we're saying is that when you, and I mean, I know that the car manufacturers internationally are starting to do it quite a lot. We say that when you produce something and you generate waste, or when you produce something that in time is going to become waste, you need to take responsibility, you need to understand the life cycle of that product, and you need to understand where along that life cycle of that particular product waste is generated, and you need to take some level of responsibility for it right through its life cycle. And what we've done is to then put in an enabling chapter that provides for us to require people along that waste chain to be able to deal with their waste in relation to a life cycle analysis, and to then take measures that emanate from our understanding of how that whole waste cycle then unfolds over the life cycle of a particular product. Again, it's something that we're doing in consultation with the Minister of Trade and Industry and in consultation with affected producers before producing a notice that requires them to do so. In terms of waste management activities, Section 19 and 20 provide for the listing and conducting of waste management activities. And what it does is to set out providing an ethics framework that allows you to set out what waste management practices people require a waste management license. Now, in the annexure, in the schedule to the Act, there is an initial list of activities, and we published this as a transitional measure on the basis that over the next few months and during the process of this board is going through Parliament, we will then refine and finalise that list of activities. So there is a list of waste management activities. In the first version of the bill that was published, there wasn't. And again, I think that right across the board, stakeholders, both industry and NGO and everybody else, said they wanted to see what that list was. So we did, we produced an initial list. Section 21 to 25 outlines the requirements for storage, collection, and transportation of waste. And municipalities are required to provide containers for the collection of recyclable waste. And then in part 6 we deal with the treatment, processing, and disposal of waste. Section 26 and 27 establishes a prohibition on the unauthorized disposal of waste, which includes a prohibition on illegal dumping and on littering. And at the moment in municipal bylaws you've got prohibitions on littering and it can include on illegal dumping, but this would give a much broader enabling framework within national legislation in order to deal with that problem. And I'm certain one of the big things that arose from the conference that we held with municipalities was the fact that quite large proportions in certain circumstances of waste budgets are actually going on cleaning up illegal dumping sites. And that municipalities and provinces felt very strongly that you needed a very strong prohibition in order that you could deal with this issue of illegal dumping and decisively. Okay, part 7 of the legislation deals with what we call industry waste management plans. And this is something that we would like to see being able to be dealt with and understood in two ways. The one is that we would like to see a situation where a particular sector, for example, the ferroalloy industry, says across the country all the ferroalloy producers go through a certain industrial process. At the end of it, they've got a certain waste stream. That waste stream is capable of being dealt with in a uniform way across the country. Or maybe a more advanced example is that of the tire industry, where waste tires are produced, and we are discussing with the tire industry then producing an industry tire management plan where they'll get together and they'll say, this is how across the country we want waste tires to be dealt with. So there's a proactive element to it where sectors can come together and produce a plan, or a particular industry, a particular industrial plant could come together who could say, look, we need a plan. One of our big steel producers in the country came to us a while ago and said they had 34 separate waste management activities in their plants, and they felt that if they did one plan for the management of that waste stream, they would manage their waste much more effectively. So this is also an enabling framework that would allow people to say proactively we want to do a plan. It is also a provision that allows government to identify where we think that the waste is not being managed adequately in a particular sector or in a particular industrial plant, and to go and say to them, you must now produce a plan and show us how you can improve the management of your waste. So it's a sector, it gives us the ability to deal with sectoral waste streams in a range of different ways. And we also allow for the plan to be prepared by provincial departments on behalf of industry and also to recover costs. And we're also looking at things like if you want to deal with the city of Johannesburg, for example, has been looking at the issue of how do they deal with the waste that is generated by hawkers and street traders. And obviously you can't go and make individual street traders produce a plan. You need a comprehensive overall plan. So there you might have a situation where either Gauteng province or the city of Johannesburg then goes and says, we are going to produce a waste management plan for street traders in our province or in our municipality. And then they would do that plan on behalf of those stakeholders. And in that process of consultation and consensus will we get agreement on how that waste is underway to be dealt with. Again, we consult the affected industry in section 28. In part 8, we deal with contaminated land. Now, this is something, again, that is completely new in South African legislation, and I think that last week when we were dealing with the NEMA amendments legislation, the questions were raised around what you do around the fact that there's historical land contamination, soil and water contamination in the country. This section allows government to deal with that. The purpose is to provide for the remediation of contaminated land, and essentially in section 35 to 41, we set out a procedure that allows us to identify identify an area, investigate whether it is contaminated, work out how serious that contamination is, provide an assessment report that then gets looked at by government, make proposals around remediation, and then establish an order that says this is what must now happen with this land. It must be remediated in the following way, to the following quality. We also provide this sort of recognition that if there's a piece of land that is contaminated, you might want to remediate it to the point that it could be used for another industrial purpose. You might want to remediate it to the point that you want a residential settlement on that land. You might want it remediated to the point that the soil is good enough to be used for agriculture. And in each of those cases, what you're going to do is going to be different. So we provide for a recognition of that. And we then establish a register to which the details of land that is contaminated and land that was contaminated that has now been cleaned up must be in. I think this is something that we had long debates with industry about. I think that maybe what I should say about this legislation is it's been a very interesting process. Two things about it have been very interesting. The one thing is that when you introduce new measures into law, there is a cost. One of the big submissions from everybody was everybody said there are costs to this bill and you want someone else to pay. I really think that that was something very striking that we've right now in the consultative process. And our response was to say there is a cost. Where the government ends up, I mean, for example, if you're doing with salt chemicals at the moment or with the secondary asbestos pollution, where the 20 or 30 years on, government puts out a couple of hundred million rand to clean up the problem, or where the industry puts in some up front, or whether someone else does it, the fact is a cost. The question is not about who, the question is how is that cost allocated and shared in a proportionate way between the people who are carrying responsibility for it. Our consensus at the moment is that basically the default in South Africa is that if the stuff is left lying around in the end, there's an assumption the government will have to pay to clean up in situations where you need to clean up. And I don't know if a lot of people have had a huge set of health and other consequences from the fact that it hasn't happened. So I think that, yes, there are costs to this legislation, but we think that at the moment they are externalized in the sense that at the moment there is nothing that says that this needs to be paid. This section is also a retrospective section because obviously you're not going to clean up land that hasn't yet been contaminated but might be contaminated in the future. Because we have to have reason to believe contamination has happened in order to be able to address it. So I think that this is something that probably tomorrow you're going to hear a lot more about from stakeholders. In terms of section 42, it provides for recognition programs for good practice. And I think that something that industry in particular felt is that actually they would have wanted something quite a lot stronger in terms of financial incentives. We feel there is something that must come out of the environmental fiscal reform framework and the work the Treasury is doing needs to in time set out how those fiscal and other incentive measures get put into place. But we've provided an enabling clause for that. We then go on to Chapter 5, which is a very long section, and maybe just to explain why we made it so detailed. It's the one section of the legislation that is not written at a framework level. And that is because our experience over the last 10 years has been that in order to license effectively, the power has to be in the law. And if you don't have the power in the law, then you can't tell people to do things or license in a particular way. So we opted for a fairly detailed section on licensing. We have, you will remember last week when we looked at the issue of integrated environmental authorizations and the ability to issue single licenses for multiple activities. We have got alignment in this legislation with that, those NEMA amendments. So the example we used quite a lot last week was that in order to set up a landfill site, you would need to do an EIA and you would need to get a waste license. In the way this licensing section is written, we provide again for an integration of that process. So you would run through one process of public consultation and information, and then at the end you get your waste license together with the information, the conditions for water affairs, as well as the waste license. So that is in the licensing chapter. I think the important background is that in January 2006, the permitting of waste disposal facilities that is currently set out in the Environmental Conservation Act was transferred from the Department of Water Affairs to DEEP. And I think there are people in this committee, it was dealt with in the Water Affairs Portfolio Committee at that time when the transfer was made. So Chapter 5 provides for DEEP to be the licensing authority. In Section 43, we set out who the licensing authority is, and we set out two things. Firstly, we said that DEEP is the licensing authority for hazardous waste facilities. And that is because of the environmental risks around hazardous waste facilities. The fact that many of them are cross-border facilities in the sense that they don't only take waste from a particular local area, waste is trucked across the country into those facilities, and so you can't manage it effectively from one municipality or from one province. And then thirdly, that the substances that they get affected by those facilities are often substances that are regulated in terms of international conventions. So we said that people deal with the hazardous waste facilities, that provincial departments would be the licensing authorities for general waste facilities. On page 25 and 26, what we've done is, and I'm not going to go through it in detail now, but what we've done is to do a diagram, and so it's split across two slides, but of the process of the flow chart that will determine how a waste license is or isn't issued. And as well as so we provide for on page 25 of the slide, you've got to appoint an independent person to manage the application. There's a provision for a processing fee. There's a provision for consultation with other organs of state. There's then a decision on the application if it's granted, refused, or rejected. And rejected means you've got to go back to the drawing board and either add other information or do something else. Then on page 26, the big box on the left-hand side sets out what is required in the license application. And then sets out further details of the process. We then set out issue a license with conditions. We talk about transferring. If EnviroServe is bought up by, I don't know, some other waste company, then we would have to change the holder of the licenses that they have. The license can be revoked or suspended if it is in contravention with license conditions. The holder of the license can surrender the license, and the license has to be renewed before an expiry date, which triggers again a review of the license. So there's quite a major set of detail on how the licensing system around waste will happen. Then, in Chapter 6, we deal with waste information, and I think there's two things to say here. The first thing is that there is already an existing national waste information system that DEEP, together with the provinces, has worked on establishing over the last 4 or 5 years. It was one of the projects that emanated from that, the NEDA-funded National Waste Management Strategy, and over the last couple of years, we piloted that system in a number of provinces in the Eastern Cape and the Free State, and I think there's been KwaZulu Natal, in Mpumalanga. And so what we're talking about here is not an intention to do something, but it's a rollout of something that has been tried and tested over a period. Waste information is critical for managing the waste thing in the country. I mean, a lot of our waste problem is because we don't know what is waste. We don't know what is in the waste stream. We don't know what quantities is in the waste stream. We don't know how waste streams vary from urban to rural area, from metro to district, from coastal to inland cities. We don't know any of that. We don't know how much of the substances in the waste, in the domestic waste stream, may be hazardous. So there's an information vacuum. And without that information, we just don't know volume. So without that information, it's virtually impossible for the people who collect and manage waste to be able to plan properly. They don't know how many trucks they need, they don't know what budget they need, they don't know how many people they need, they don't know. And so really this information for us is the absolute fundamental basis of any proper management system of for waste in the country. We set out the requirements of the system, the objectives of the system. We put out requirements for the provision of information and access to information. I mean, as we felt it was quite important to say that this is information that we feel needs to be out in the public as well, and the public must have access. So we provided for that in the section. And then what we've done is to provide for the establishment of provincial waste management information systems that are consistent with the overall architecture of the national system. There's then a section on compliance and enforcement, and the one thing that we have done in here that is different to some of the other compliance and enforcement sections in other NEMA legislation is that we give specific compliance powers to the Minister of Water Affairs and Forestry, and that is in relation to the fact that waste, pollution from waste and pollution of water are very, very closely related. And often you might need, often in relation to a particular license where a water section of that license is contravened, or there's water pollution that is dealt with in a waste license, that minister is going to need to be able to enforce the sections of that license. So we provided for powers to the WAC minister to enforce. And it's done, there's a consultation process around that. In section 66, we put in a provision for where we think someone has contravened the provisions of a license, for them to do a waste impact report, where they would need to, we would say, we have reason to believe that you have an illegal, that you are dumping waste illegally, or that you aren't disclosing, you're dumping waste that is not in your license. And what we would require is then to appoint someone then to do an assessment of exactly what is happening that we would then use as a basis for either for directives or for compliance and enforcement action. In section 67 is the offences section, and in 68 obviously the penalties. Now in chapter 8 we deal with the general matters, and as what I spoke about, there is a very long list of regulations in this legislation, potential regulations that might be passed. And it relates to two things. The one thing is, the point that I made at the beginning is, this is framework legislation that sets out the legal basis for managing waste into the future. So there are a whole lot of those regulations where we need to do further research, we need to do further consultation, we need to do a whole lot of checking for work in order to write those regulations. And they may not happen for a year or two or five, but we need to put into law the power to do them, because they are, in our view, essential elements of what ultimately a proper waste hierarchy, waste minimization approach is going to be. So we've identified the set of regulations. We've also distinguished between the regulations, as I said earlier, that we think need to be passed nationally, because if you have different requirements in different provinces to create economic distortion and inconsistencies, and those regulations that we think that MEC should also be able to write legislation on. We then provide in 72 and 73 for the consultation process around the actions in the bill, and you'll see wherever you do something new, there needs to be a public consultation process. We then provide for exemptions and appeals, and provide for a process in applications. We set out that all applications have to be considered, a decision must be made, provide for review, we provide for the transfer, the transfers of exemptions and also for appeal. Chapter 9 deals with delegations by the Minister and MECs to officials. Section 80 is a schedule of we deal with the legislation that needs to be repealed or amended, and that is set out in Schedule 1. And then there's a set of transitional provisions in Section 81 and 82, which outlines what will happen in relation to the transition between the ECHA licensing system and the new system, particularly because the lists are different. So we kind of make sure that we don't make a whole lot of people who haven't got licenses because they didn't need them at this point in time, that we don't make them illegal. And in certain situations, under the way that waste licensing is dealt with at the moment, Water Affairs, who did the licensing historically, has been able to issue what they call general exemptions, which is for certain activities, waste activities that have a fairly minimal impact, there's a general, provided they comply with a general exemption, and you don't want to then make all of those illegal things. There's a set of transitional provisions. Then the Waste Act is regarded as a specific environmental management act, which means that it falls under NEMA and hence under the NEMA provisions. Essentially, the environmental management inspectors can then enforce the provisions of the Act, which is something very important. And then the short title and commencement. I wanted to just talk a little bit about the stakeholder response to the bill. There have been, I think that the bill has been, since the first version of it being brought out, there's been substantial redrafting in response to stakeholder input. I spoke about the fact that in the consultation everybody said someone else needed to pay. Everybody said, yeah, we in general think what's in here is, well, everybody didn't like certain things, but everybody thought it was necessary, but they all wanted someone else to pay. So I really think that the issues around that can come up. But I think that really there are, in our view, clearly each sector of society and each stakeholder in the sector has got very different vested interests, and a lot of the comments clearly related to their vested interests. The recycling industry wants legislation that will guarantee a steady stream of recyclable material, and they want municipalities to be forced to separate and source sort of the recyclables to be provided. I mean, I'm not caricaturing it a bit, but I think just to give you a sense of it. The municipalities, on the other hand, are saying we don't have the institutional capacity or the infrastructure to do it. And anyway, industry is generating all this waste, so we want industry to pay or to pay much higher fees for dumping of waste, and then we will put in place the sort of separation system. I think that from communities and from the NGO communities, there is a perspective that waste, that the poor bears the heaviest burden in relation to the problems that are caused by waste management, and government and business must pay to make sure that burden is removed, and that a whole lot of the things in the Act must be made stronger. Industry, on the other hand, is worried about the fact that there are things in this bill that are going to impose and create costs for them and a burden on them. So I think that the stakeholder in drafting, in the final instance, there was a very delicate, we walked on eggs and we walked the tightrope in order to find something that did take account of all of those issues, but that finally made a judgment call on behalf of government to say we need to put in place a waste minimization system in South Africa. We've got to change the way we deal with waste. We've got to strengthen the legal regime so that the kinds of abuses and problems that we have at the moment don't happen. But we've also got to, over a period of time, recognize the fact that there isn't capacity in the state or in society in general to do all of this at once, and therefore you've got to phase it in over time. So I really think that is the kind of sort of balances that we have to address in relation to the drafting of the bill, and I'm quite certain that tomorrow, when the public put forward their views, all of those different perspectives are going to be repeated. So I think really that is where the bill is. I think that when we went into the certification, I said that we had a long interaction with the State Board Driver around the issue of what extent you could or couldn't regulate municipal waste. In other discussions as well as the issue of what was a national waste function and what in fact needed to be done provincially. So I think that really, those were the things, and I think that ultimately we ended up with a bill that we were all happy with in terms of the certification process, but those have been debated. I think I've spoken for a long time, so I'll stop now. Thank you.
Thank you, DGG. Welcome, Chair. Before we could probably get into clarification, questions, and answers, we are actually having two presentations today, but the modus operandi is going to be we will adjourn at about 12:15. We have a special caucus meeting this today, and reconvene again at 1400 hours. I'm not quite sure of the venue where we are going to reconvene at the same venue, and then we will have coastal management to come and present at the time. I don't know whether on your side you still have people who would like to speak to the bill or not. No.
In terms of this,
no. Okay. It's question time and clarification time. Got it? Okay. I've got Gareth, I've got the chair, I've got Manyanga, and I've got you in the door. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DDD, for the presentation. A couple of issues for clarity and I guess some comments. This might be a safe word by a tough question. Could you speak us specifically to the division of powers issue on this bill? Because you said broadly that the state law advisors and yourself have created a careful balance and you don't think you're impinging on any competencies as they currently stand, particularly with regards to the functions of municipalities and provinces. Who have particular concerns with regards to waste management. So, on what basis can the national government place obligations on those on the municipal and provincial level? That's my first question. Secondly, with regards to cost, obviously the bill obviously I think is long overdue and we clearly need to regulate waste in South Africa as a matter of urgency. And I associate myself with the comments about particularly the poor bearing the brunt of what is left over from production processes, particularly in terms of pollution. But I would be interested to know, firstly, the view of Treasury on this particular bill. What you envisage, for instance, if this bill was at least passed by the two houses next year, and I understand that it might take several years for the bill to come into force. I mean, the air quality bill will take approximately 5 years. What are the cost estimates over, for instance, the NTA period going forward, starting from the end of next year, with regards from each point of view, and if you have any other figures from a countrywide point of view, and that's particularly why I ask the view of what the Treasury's point of view on this is. Then it would be interesting to also know the view of the trade and of the Minister of Trade and Industry, particularly with regard to, for instance, Section 7417, which relates to the Minister of the Minister here. Making regulations after consultation with the Minister of Trade and Industry, in particular industry. So while I agree it's obviously necessary for the ministers to communicate on this, it is somewhat for the encroachment on another minister's domain. I guess the issue of capacity is a major problem, and I don't think it's a reason for the bill not to be passed. But and this relates to the issue of the treasury as well and transfers, particularly to municipalities and the project consolidate, which already failed to perform a minimum percentage of their required functions, and now there will be increased functions as well. I mean, I guess one of the problems is that you could create centres of excellence in South Africa, and then other centres don't have the bill enforced, particularly from the local level, which could inadvertently create an unlevel playing field if businesses or industry choose to move certain activities to certain areas and so on. So that's that comment. And the last comment is as far as Chapter 7, with how it currently stands, which gives the department the right to obviously investigate particular producers who may be suspicion of them illegally dumping or processing waste, where activity generally for which they're not permitted for. As a matter of interest, how is that currently done? Because presumably there is huge amounts of illegal activities going on, and I am aware that there are some particular problems, particularly in the medical waste sector in South Africa at the moment, with regard to quite severe levels of illegal storage of medical waste in Gauteng, running into several hundreds of tons of warehouses. And how is that currently regulated, and how does the department currently seek enforcement on issues like that without these provisions as they are proposed? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Committee. Good. My apologies. Happy to have been in the same case on this transport challenge problem. First, some few questions. One is, what is the economic potential of the waste industry in South Africa? Where is it right now, but what is the potential going forward? Secondly, do we have money for the separation of waste? What are the cost implications of this? Because one would assume that they would be separate, bags and all of that, separating. Have we budgeted this? And how does that talk to similar waste strategies in the third world? Are we not too first world here? I respect and I understand the importance of having a waste strategy, but is that not a concern of overdeveloped society? Or to who got the potential for it? Then thirdly is in the initial briefing, informal briefing, we mentioned the issue of economic waste. It's not covered in the PM. Where we made an example that you go to a situation, for instance, right now we've just gone past winter and now it's summer, and all the winter clothes that Edgar was selling will not come again. Now, what happens to those clothes? That it is waste right there. You go to the Bajela estate, where if something is not bought or sold, it's dumped into the sea. It still has got what we call as market use value, but doesn't have exchange value. There's no market demand for it, even though it's still a useful product. Now, how do we deal with that? Then how does the bill deal with the present problem of mining waste? We got money dumped all over the place. Do we deal with them in this deal? If not, what is our strategy of dealing with the mining waste again going to the future? Thank you.
Thank you.
Jefferson. Waste has to be managed at the Thank you very much, Teddy. You know, I so love to listen to you when you do your presentation. I'm just falling in love. And I think by so doing, I gain some of the core. Good enough. Well, at times you have a group of just lay people, lay persons, you address them. Now, you want them to acknowledge exactly what do you mean by weight. Because there is a possibility that some of them, they cannot, they can just go the spot. And you find that some of the items or whatever, they don't take them as weight. Now, I'm a bit worried. When you go to a township, we have legal and illegal disposal sites. Surprisingly, you just find that one day when you go past the area where you think it's a legal disposal site, you'll find that there is a big informal settlement on top of that waste. We have mentioned water pollution, air pollution, and there's a lot of wrong happening there. You know, dirty running water, you know, illegal toilets, you name, they are on the disposal site. And on top of that, they will add more on their own. Now, my question is, who is responsible to control that situation? Though I might say it is the municipality in a way, but I see things happening really. And it's just, you find that informal settlement is there for years on that disposal site. I might be out of order now. I'm so worried about the smoking cars on the road. I've never seen the like of it, I am telling you. But, well, what are we doing about that? Because really and truly, it disturbs us and it pollutes.
Just one small problem here. We touched on the general public. The fact, you know, this is one thing that is there now, is that people have free access to waste sites. If you might really and vigorously attempt to stop this, because this medical waste, small children come onto waste sites playing with old injected needles and things like that, eating food from a waste. I mean, can we somehow just bring something else? Thank you.
You may respond.
Thank you,
Teddy. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to the third question was asked around division of powers and what the legal and I suppose constitutional basis is. I'm going to hand over to Jenny Ford, who's our legal drafter, to answer that question at the end. We'll deal with the others first. Okay, there, I think that's the first issue around treasury and trade industry. The bill, this bill went to cabinet twice. It went to cabinet prior to publication, and then we amended it and we took it back to cabinet. And in between that, there were bilaterals with those departments, as well as written comments from them, all of which were incorporated. So treasury and trade and industry are happy with what is in the legislation, and I think trade and industry in particular wanted to also make sure this was written in such a way that we don't contravene any of our WTO obligations, and that has been done. So in other words, we've got to deal even-handedly with waste as a commodity that is in turn waste generated in South Africa and waste from elsewhere. You've got to have one set of rules. So that's all been addressed. On the capacity issue, I think that the legislation assumes that capacity is going to have to be built in the sector, and there is a separate process, and it might be worthwhile, I think, at some point in the new year to in fact do a presentation. We've just done an audit of the state of municipal waste services across the country, looking at what the backlog is, what the level of unserviced areas is, what the reasons for that are. Is it a capacity problem? Is it a maintenance problem? Is it a funding problem? Is it a management problem? And we've got some answers from the work that we've done across the country, and we are engaging in the people who are studying services in the economic cluster, looking at services in the social cluster, in order to run separate processes around that. We're looking at the municipal infrastructure grant formula. We're looking at the issue of funding the right basic services to address that. So for us, I think that is really an implementation issue that flows from the legislation rather than something that needs to be embedded in law. And there's a very big problem around the country. Our estimate is that probably you've got 45% of households may not have an adequate service. Doesn't mean they have no service at all, but probably don't have an adequate service. There's quite a lot of people, particularly in rural towns and peri-urban areas and informal settlements, who don't have a waste disposal service at all. So there's a big problem in the country. In terms then of the economics of waste, our sense is that internationally in both developing countries and in the developed world, waste is seen in general as increasingly becoming seen as a useful commodity. I mean, in China, they've got this concept of what they call the cyclical economy, which is this notion of the life cycle of a product. That you start off by, you make things out of other things, and at the end of it, you want to get another thing out of it. So you want to look at that whole cycle and look at what, in fact, that life cycle assessment, which is in here. So that you then at various points away are looking at what is the recovery, the reuse, the recycling potential in the product. Internationally, waste is big business. And nationally in South Africa as well, and I mean, I think it might be useful if any of the recyclers come to present tomorrow to ask them a little bit about the economics of the industry and what makes it run. South Africa doesn't do too badly on recycling of certain things. I mean, cans are quite good in world terms. The PET industry is picking up, so there's quite big recycling things in South Africa. The recycling industry is impacted by international commodity prices. And part of the problem is that then when there's a commodity boom, people get into recycling because they make money, and when the commodity boom, when it collapses, then they kind of fire everybody who they set up to collect it. So the stability of the industry and its how to maximize its income-generating potential is one issue. I think the second issue is an issue around health and safety, which is that unless you are very clear about the fact that you want recycling to be done in ways that do not harm human health, you really do run the risk of putting particularly poor people into very dangerous circumstances. I mean, we've got quite a lot of people in sweatshops, in South Africa, but in countries like, in some developing countries, it's big business where people are dismantling computers in order to get the metal out of it. And then you're getting exposure to things like lead and cadmium. So I think that for us, this is the issue of creating a framework for recycling in South Africa that does not impacts on people's health and well-being is a very important thing. I think similarly the issue of people collecting off landfill sites. The way we deal with it in the DAW is that we provide for the ability to issue a license and for that license to have conditions. And at the moment there's a document produced by Water Affairs and Forestry called the Minimum Requirements, which says you should not allow scavenging on landfills. We would like to see a situation where municipalities are providing safe facilities for recycling and where that issue of the recycling economy is actually being brought into the municipal waste stream. Our sense is yes, there is a cost to putting in place a waste separation system, but you then are turning your waste into a resource that will eventually earn some money in the long run. Cape Town at the moment is setting up a big materials recovery facility in Athlone, I think, and is starting to pilot waste separation on the basis that if they start to recover that waste stream in the long run, they get a revenue stream that comes in. And then what then happens is you then also don't have to pay, if you don't generate as much waste, you don't need to pay as much for your landfills will last longer, your cost of running those landfills go down, there's a long-term savings in your entire waste management operation over time. And I think really one of the things in this is there's a cost-benefit analysis that needs to be done over time. In terms of the costing of the bill, we did a study of the financial implications, and there's a very, very short summary of which was actually quite a long document on page 47 at the back here, where we've looked at the cost to the state. And you will see that in some it goes up and then sort of levels out for municipalities, in part because if you look at it, you're presuming that, and this is obviously averaged across all municipalities, so it's a very kind of macro look at it, but if you look at the thing where it says municipalities, additional infrastructure and related operation and maintenance costs for recycling facilities, it goes up until year four and then starts to come down as the revenue stream from doing that starts to then kick in. So I think that's what the issue is. It's like many things. You pay up front, but then in the long run. It's the whole issue of clean production and clean technology. An upfront investment in order to generate an operational saving on the time is what happens. In terms of mining waste, the way we've done the definition of mining waste is included in this legislation. And would come under the purview of it, and mining, we've excluded the mine dumps themselves. But what we have included is all the other waste on the mine. And I think the issue there, similarly, we discussed the NPRDA bill, I don't know what the current draft of the NPRDA bill is. I never refreshed my mind before I came here. But the version that went into the parliamentary process that was later withdrawn excluded mining waste. So I think that's another area that's going to have to be sorted out with mining. We're going to need to get an alignment. The initial comment from DME on this legislation only asked that we exclude the dumps themselves from the purview of this bill. But not any other way, so then that's been changed later. So I think Sherry's going to need to go back and check on that.
What was the motivation? Why did they want us to exclude mining dumps?
I think because very often the mining dumps themselves get reprocessed and get dealt with in the... It's a byproduct, in a sense, it's a byproduct of the mining operation. And what we're looking at here is we've excluded byproducts that get reused in other circumstances. Our definition of waste excludes byproducts that can be used again. And essentially, I think the argument of mining was that the mine dumps themselves increasingly are being reprocessed and are managed under their rehabilitation provisions in their legislation, as well as in their occupational health and safety requirements, as well as to an extent, by the way, the Water Act interfaces with their legislation. So we excluded the dumps, but everything else, the actual waste streams that get generated by mines, and they're lost. I mean, ranging from medical waste to PCB and used oils to a whole range of other things were included in this, they included. So I think that is something that might need to be looked at. In terms of the illegal official website, we say here that you may only, anybody, only a website, you need a license to set up a website. So anybody who sets up a website without a license is in contravention of the law and there is an offence. So I think that part of the issue around this is systematic enforcement of the problem. Is what is going to need to happen in order to prevent the situation that you're talking about. It's also something that should be dealt with in land use legislation, and it's something where the local authorities and municipalities need to be getting their planning right so that they aren't actually allowing people to sit on land where there's been a landfill site, or to, I know you've got situations where scavengers live on landfill sites and that needs to be prohibited. In license conditions, we will certainly prohibit it. The smoking cars on the road is an air quality issue, and it's part of what the municipality should be doing to monitor air quality in the area. Should be doing routine vehicle testing, and that's something that we've been talking to municipalities about getting the system up and running in order to carry on doing that. I'd now like to hand over to Jenny to talk a little bit about the constitutional and issue of religion of function.
Yes, this is what we can do. So you see, when they wrote the Bible, they say, the Bible says, you must love your mother and father, respect your mother and father, but then it goes further, and it says, and I will give you a long life. Now what we, I don't know. Like, let's take our transportation of waste. We say, any person engaged in transporting of waste, that's the name we push off. You must cover up the waste full stop. But we must learn and say, if you don't, because check, you drive from Acacia Park to the waste site here on the N7. It's not only unhealthy, it is very dangerous because people are running in a road. Everything, running off the vehicles, now you in your car behind, accidents can occur, and people pick up the things from us. We must say, that is the law, that is what we say. If you don't comply with that law, this will be the punishment. That they understand what we're talking about. Because they don't understand in this country something what we're talking about. Thank you, sir.
Okay. And I think one of the things that when we go through the tools by tools that we must look at is whether the committee is satisfied what the things are that we have set out and whether the penalties are correctly linked to this. Yeah, so it is made an offense.
Now there's one aspect before she comes in that she did not respond to. That is the economic waste, the surplus that we have. What happens to it? Where is it dumped?
Okay, I am not certain where all the waste is, all the kind of waste is done. I should imagine, and I don't know what happens to the head of person, it doesn't sell. But I think that what we do in this legislation is to ensure that you don't have the illegal or the uncontrolled dumping of those products. To put in place a regime that would make it much more difficult to transport, store, and dump those kinds of products. I think it's one of the issues. So in actual fact, we need to be engaging much more with municipalities about what is surplus in their areas and how could it be being productive and used, and at what point would you need to be able to do it. So I think that really, this issue of how do we get away from this notion of a throwaway society to saying, here's something. How can it be used in another context, in another way, for another purpose by other people, needs to start becoming part of that local economic development thinking of municipalities and the issue of waste as a potential resource, a surplus as a resource, it really does need to be put. And in the waste planning, in the waste management planning, integrated waste management plan, it's something that we ask municipalities to do, is to look and identify in their area how they are going to recover, reduce, and use recycle. So we ask the municipalities to explicitly start thinking about the issue.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. We have asked someone from the Research Department of the Parliament to look at this question. I'm hoping that we'll get some immediate answer, a sense of what happens with this surplus production. In India, they've got a system that there are two markets in India. There's a normal market, if you've got money, you can buy, participate, blah, 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 blah. But if you're a poor person, okay, who wants resources, blah, 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 they transfer all the, I think it's a secondary market, but for poor people to participate, they can still buy things there. They may not have the same value, but they're still useful. I'm not sure how we can, of course, in one or two, look at that without denigrating it. We'd have to find institutional, but we cannot ignore that. We will not finalize the judgment or legislation on waste that doesn't talk to what all these shops are doing and all these other producers. We will have to find a way, CDG, to find it here in the legislation. We have to address it. Whether whatever indication it has, it has to be addressed. We will not ask the same question that Europeans are asking on this question. We're in Africa, we're in third world countries. So if there's a waste, their waste framework won't care about this because they've got a social security, they've got other things. We don't have that. So we have got to talk to those people. So we will have to find some way of bringing that in.
Perhaps before you could really come in, just sum up on the questions on this side so you don't get that chance.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. I mean, this is long overdue and this is great. I mean, I think that we really need to delve into this issue very deeply and get a proper waste regime going. And well, I think this is great. A couple of issues, I mean, relating to the last point that, on the lease rate. I mean, what I've noticed around recycling in Cape Town, for instance, in this kind of area, is that it's often done by the poorest of the poor and done by the homeless people a lot of the time. But it's become increasingly difficult for them because a lot of the depots get moved further and further out of the actual CBD. And so the areas that they've got to transport it to is further and further away, and so it makes it very unviable for them to do that. So it's an issue that we need to look at there. What I've also found in looking at recycling is that I think that we should look at a way that municipalities pay not only that the price that people get paid for recycling is not only the cost of that material, but also the cost of keeping that, or the benefit of keeping that out of the landfill site. You know, we should include that amount of money in there, and that would make recycling more viable as well. Because, I mean, it's saving the city money not putting that stuff in the landfill site, and that needs to be included within that. The other thing is, I mean, rural areas is a particularly difficult one as well. I mean, I travel to the Wild Coast a lot, and I see a lot of communities there where there's absolutely no waste disposal sites at all. And, in this pristine environment, people are throwing away this stuff because it has nothing to do with it. So we need to think out of the box as to how we deal with those particular service delivery issues in that particular instance. The last one is also in terms of copper. I mean, I don't know if this looks at it at all, but I mean, really, we've got to look in a way that we, you know, somehow tackle the copper trade, the illegal copper trade South Africa, and I'm not sure if this has specific recommendations around that, but this is something that I think we need to grapple with as a committee, because this is obviously a huge issue affecting Eskom and Telkom and the country as a whole. So, basically, yeah, how you propose that we really think it through those issues.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're I think that we would agree that we need to try and look at establishing a recycling regime that will benefit poor people. But I think that we also do need to look at what works right across the world. And I was in Belgium a few weeks ago, and in Brussels itself, in the larger section of Brussels, they've got a scheme where they encourage people to keep chickens and goats in their backyard in the middle of the city in order to so basically eat organic waste is what is happening, and then you're getting a whole other economy going and a level of food self-sufficiency and in some cases support for schools and orphanages and things like that. So I think you can get very creative anywhere around how you're going to use products, and I think we need to look at best practices around the world. I think in the legislation what we've tried to do is to create a framework that is enabling enough to be able to pick up on that best practice and use it appropriately. I think that really the issue for us, the big challenge, not only in legal terms, is how does waste get value? you know, and the other thing that you can't legislate but is critical that we realize is that we've got to change the way society uses waste. You know, the consumer throwaway society approach that we have in South Africa has got to be turned around, and I think that really that's the other part of this implementation. It's got to go around with mass education. The same way as we're starting to look at how do we educate people around climate change and saving energy and saving electricity or using renewable rather than finite resources. It's part of that same package of issues that we need to really get to grips with. Thanks.
Briefly to respond to the institutional question, I think it comes up that every time we draft environmental legislation, we have the truth of being dotted around every schedule and A and B of every schedule. Interestingly, I think it's been a legal debate. It's been some colourful discussions with the law advisors, but not really a sectoral debate and not much discussion on that. Our entry point, of course, was to go to the schedules and look at the functions that are sitting there. And I think it's about how one works with that and it should. Our first aim was to ensure that there's consistency with the suite of environmental legislation that happens. You'll know that we were in a very similar position with the Air Quality Act, where air pollution is also a part of these functions. Looking at the wording of the schedule, I think gave us a gap to do what we thought was best for the country, and that's it talks about refuse removal, refuse dumps, and solid waste disposal, and we took that in the strict interpretation of those words to be largely a service delivery function and a service delivery mandate. We then thought we had to reconcile that with the aspirations and the needs of waste management as a whole for the entire country and see whether that wording could accommodate all of it. And it can't. Certainly we've got environment and pollution control sitting in Schedule 4, Part A, so there is schedule some national responsibility and provincial responsibility for environment and pollution control as a whole. And what was important for us was to then go to the section 155 and the section 44, which I'm sure you've heard about ad nauseum in this committee, which gets to where national has the powers to come in and legislate. And when we try to reconcile the wording of section 4, the factual aspirations of the legislation of what needs to happen to make waste management successful in the country and workable, we came up with a range of things that didn't fit in the municipal function. So, for example, we look at the obligations that are sitting there under the international conventions, like the Basel Convention, the POPS Convention, Rotterdam Convention, and so on. Clearly, that's not a municipal thing. We look at the fact that the white paper, which obviously was a very strongly influencing mandate for us to craft the legislation in, has a push towards regionalization. Regionalization, of course, again, moving away from the local thing. I think we also looked at the fact that it's wonderful hazardous waste sites that are available at the moment to commercially available as opposed to limited industrial site-specific sites. There's very few of them in the country. It's not one municipality, one hazardous waste site. It's not even at the state, one province, one hazardous waste site. So again, that would be something that has a national economic impact and a national requirement to regulate, and of course because of the consequences of managing those sites poorly. There was also the dynamic that came in around service delivery and who policed the police and so on. The municipality is, of course, responsible for running them over the local sites, and we believe that the wording of the Constitution is really then being regulated of their own service delivery from an environmental commission. So in essence, taking all those things together, we found that there's enough space within Section 44 to a limited extent within Section 155, which governs on hand, and Section 44, 2 and Subsection 3, that there is just for national legislation without infringing on the local mandate. I think we've tried to be very sensitive in the drafting to make sure that the autonomy of local authorities is protected and national and provincial hasn't taken it over. And what we've done in crafting Section 7, 8, and 9 is make a space that where it is necessary for the country as a whole for protection of the environment. We've relied on Section 44.2 and Section 44 sub 3, which draws in Schedule 4, and saying this is necessarily for within the criteria. We need this for the country as a whole, otherwise there will be distorted economic impact, or we will not be able to protect the country from the pollution and environmental impacts of waste management as a whole, because it's not practical for strategies to measure their own.
Dr. Chairman?
Yes, thank you for the question. Just two short questions here. The first one is your comment on the waste management project nationally. The second question is with the OECD bag company, what did they do to achieve in reducing waste change and possibly public awareness of the issue? Third question, environment prevention inspectors, the efficacy of the inspectors being monitored and measured. And with the draft waste salary regulation, the draft waste salary regulation has been published. And you comment on that. So the salary industry, I think the production, they should be aware of the products and residues and waste that will accrue. And therefore, should they not then take the responsibility for factoring in the management of the product? Thank you very much.
Okay, we used to eat that. Was set up out of an agreement between government labor and government labor and industry around trying to deal with the plastic bag issue. And there is this levy that is two cents on the plastic bag that goes to National Treasury. Out of that, for the first 3 years, National Treasury allocated 20 million rand a year to Buyisa Ibag. In the first couple of years, it took a long time for them to get themselves set up. Essentially, what they're doing is they're setting up transfer stations for the collection of plastics for recycling and trying to collect enterprises out of that. It took them quite a long time to get the institutional arrangements, to employ people, to get all of the legal permissions that they needed in order to set up those transfer stations to identify to do the work. That is now happening, so they're starting to spend that money the money is being spent. And I don't have volumes for what they're collecting, but I think certainly we would like to see their work being expanded over the next couple of years. And I think it is quite a lot of scope, especially in principle. I think that if one can produce a business plan and show that money will be spent, then certainly there will be money for that. In terms of the EMIs, the EMIs produce an annual report that looks at everything that they do. And there is an ongoing monitoring, the internal monitoring structures EMIs enforce this legislation. And then around the tire regulations, we just published draft red tire regulations and we put them out for comments and they're close to being finalized. But we have had recently interaction with the industry. And what they're quite keen to do is to pilot a waste management waste management plan. So in fact, what you're suggesting is what the industry is saying that they want to do. They want to come up with a plan that gets put out for comments that then sets the bottom line for how they should be dealing with their waste. And then the regulations will provide the legal kind of bottom line standards, in a sense, in terms of which that recycling initiative should be carried on. So I think that there is some level of progress there.
Are we having any further follow-up?
Can I come back?
Come here, Chair.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to check, I hear this thing about the other way could use my dams that it can still be worked on, blah, 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 blah. As a DDG, do you think that indeed there will come a time when the mining industry takes responsibility for all the dams? Mm-hmm. Is that part of just get it around? Really. Because we have to address that. Particularly today, because I think the mining is doing very well globally. They're doing very, very well. So they must have some responsibility around about what they've done to the environment.
Okay.
So can you take me on with this?
Okay. I think that we need to answer maybe a bit more broadly, which is to look at the application of the Act, the entire section. Because what we said is the Act doesn't apply to radioactive waste, regulated by the Hazardous Substances Act, the National Nuclear Regulator Act and the Nuclear Energy Act. It doesn't apply to residue deposits and residue stockpiles regulated under the NPRDA. Doesn't apply to the disposal of explosives regulated by the Explosives Act. Doesn't apply to the disposal of animal carcasses regulated by the Animal Health Act and to organic waste that emanates from agricultural activities or forestry. So I think that what we've done is to say where is the existing legislation that regulates particular waste streams in particular ways that require special measures. And included in that through those national consultations with the migrants. I think that under the mine dumps, some mine dumps get reprocessed, others don't. I think that what the argument was that when mines get set up, they've got to set up front a plan for how that dump is going to be dealt with once the mining operations conclude, and then they've got to put aside the money in terms of this mine rehabilitation fund in order that money then gets used to rehabilitate the mine dump. So I think that is where we came from in this. I mean, we said we don't want to regulate twice. What we did say is that anything else that is not a mine residue deposit or stockpile is regulated under this act. But I think it's more linked to the fact that there is a rehabilitation process and an identification up front in part of the mining, the authorization to mine around how do you deal with the dump afterwards and in the process. That it sets out clearly that would go probably beyond what we do in this act, that then made us say that part of it should go on. I think that what we would really care is that everything else that is waste from a mine resource should be included in the act because it's no different to anything else anywhere else. So I think, yes, I mean, I think it's a debate that we must have, but I think we need to look at what the new language of the NPRDA is as well in the most recent version and see whether, as I say, I haven't looked at it again, and I don't know what has exactly happened with it and whether it's in or out. So I think there's two problems. The one is this correct? And the second problem is the fact that the previous version of the NPRDA excluded all other waste activities, correct? And then we need to look at what the current version says.
Okay. I think this is quite an important issue. I think as we go forward with this legislation, likely we'll only get the public hearing of the case. So then we still have some time to work on it next year. I think this question, we have to address this question. We cannot continue to give, you know, this unhindered exploitation of the environment and the mining that has taken place since the discovery of diamonds 150 years ago. We can't continue with this. They must assume responsibility for their doing. So I think we cannot continue. So I hope that when we discuss, we'll have an adequate answer to what's going to happen with the mine dams. Is there proper regulation around that? Where are we going with that as a country? No. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Without any further follow-up, that brings us to the end of the session. Lunch will be served at Mark's building, and I think they serve lunch at about 12:30.
Give the free lunch.
Yeah. Actually, lunch will be gratis. Yeah. Free. Okay. It's not paid for. Okay. And all ANC members, we have an urgent caucus that are all of them. We will be reconvening for the coastal management meeting at about 1400 at this particular place. I'm going to go to the next one.
So you see, the thing is, you've got it, in the same way, we take it in the West. If you produce something that is a byproduct of the medium, and you're going to get it. Now, so if you produce industrial processes, it's all of the effort. It comes out of the particle, and then goes to another production process. And we say, you don't want to have to license that part of the culture is actually a piece of meat. Now, some lines are doing something. The other thing,
I'm going to go to the next one.